Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome aboard the Athletics Can't Wait Jets podcast, your nonstop shop for all things Jets with Tim McMaster, Zach Rosenblatt, and Marissa Dunn.
Can't wait!
The NFL draft just over 1 week away. It is finally here. This is one of those things every year where it's like the season ends and you start talking about the draft and then you keep talking about the draft and you keep talking about the draft and eventually it comes around and it tends to never disappoint, though. I will say that for things that have a lot of buildup, the NFL draft usually delivers. So we're almost there. And this is an exciting one here on the Can't Wait podcast because Dane Brugler is going to join us a little bit later in the show. He actually joined Zach and Marissa a little bit earlier when I wasn't around, but they did a great interview with Dane. So we'll get you to that in a little bit. But some other stuff to cover first on the Can't Wait podcast. Tim McMaster here, along with Zach Rosenblatt, our Jets reporter at The Athletic, and Marissa Dunn, our producer. Zach, for a reporter covering the draft and the lead up to the draft, obviously Dane's covering it all, right? He's like breaking down 5,000 prospects in the Beast, which is now available on The Athletic with the subscription. You get the Beast, so check that out. But you're in a different boat where like you're covering a team. So everything I just described, the lead up and all this time, how is it for a beat writer where you know it's just like seven picks maybe?
Yeah, it varies from year to year, and it mostly depends on where the team you cover is picking, because the further down you get in the order, the less it makes sense to even like really speculate what they're going to do, because you have no idea what's going to happen in front of you. Like last year was even kind of tough because they were 15th. And like, you have no idea if like the offensive linemen are going to be there at 15. Like you're kind of just guessing. You're like, okay, if so-and-so is drafted, but like when you get to 15, like between 1 to 14, that's where like a lot of like random stuff might happen. 10, you're a little bit higher up. Because the Jets have very clearly defined needs in this draft, is very clearly like defined strengths, it's a little easier to figure out like the possibilities, but it still is like it's entirely dependent on what happens in the first 9 picks. Like we're all assuming there's going to be 4 quarterbacks and 3 receivers that go, but more often than not, what we expect does not happen in these things. So it's fascinating. I always try to explain, especially to like my girlfriend who doesn't really follow the NFL, like trying to explain the off season, which sometimes it looks like I'm never working. And then, like when that draft is coming up, I have to keep reminding her. I'm like, she keeps saying, hey, our friend's birthday party is Friday night in the city. I'm like, I can't go to that. I'm going to be at the Jets facility until like 1 a.m. So like that, I always say the 3 days of the draft, really 4, cause you still got to write the day after. And then they start signing undrafted free agents. It's the busiest on the schedule, more than free agency, more than training camp, because training camp's busy because it's like every day, but it's not like condensed, like so much work you got to do at once. It's fun though. It like your adrenaline's going, you're working at midnight trying to write a story about some draft pick that you have to pretend like you've heard of before that moment, usually in the day three.
You've heard of them all.
I've read the beast,
but I'm just saying in general though, Dane makes us all smarter, I would say.
Yeah. It also means you have to spend like a lot of time in a small amount of time with Connor Hughes, unless is he going to go to the Giants facility? Maybe he'll
look out. That's a good question. I don't know.
Giants are very intriguing this draft. So
yeah, I could trade like up. Yeah.
Yep.
He'll probably split his time.
Yeah.
And then, but he misses then, you, so.
Well, and the funny thing about the draft is that, like, we spend a lot of time waiting. You wait for the moment, and then everything happens like fast. So, like, the first nine picks, it's going to be like, it feels like it's taking forever. Then the 10th pick comes, all of a sudden the pick happens. I have to write about that. Assuming they don't trade back into the first round, which they did a couple years ago, then they start telling us, all right, Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh are coming out. Go to the press conference room is right there. We have to walk over, do the press conference, kind of transcribe that, finish the other story, and then start previewing the next day. We do our podcast. Like, it's a lot of stuff at once, like I said, but I do love it. Like, it's exhausting in the moment, and like, you don't sleep well. Like, for the next few days, I'm going to be a zombie after that. But I love covering the draft. It's like an exhilarating experience because everybody's just trying to like be ready for anything. And then if a trade happens, it really throws you for a loop, especially if your team like trades up all of a sudden and, you know, you're preparing for, you know, your team, the draft, whatever, in the 20s. And then all of a sudden, oh, the Eagles are on the clock at 10. The Eagles are always trading up is why I thought all of a sudden the Eagles are on the clock at 10. So you have to like quickly, like, figure out who they're going to pick. And then once they pick it, you have to really like react quickly, and reacting quickly, you want to make sure you don't overreact or, you know, go too far in one direction. Cause like over criticizing a pick in the exact moment isn't always the best idea. And that happens sometimes with a pick like a Will McDonald, where you like, it's a name you were not planning for at all. Like I said, like, you're looking at certain prospects and then that name, I remember as in growing up as an Eagles fan, I lost that eventually, but I remember they picked, I think it was like, what, Jerome McDougal like one year, and or Danny Watkins was the big one. Danny Watkins was one where I'm like, you drafted a 6-year-old fireman out of nowhere. Like that. And so like, as a fan, it's the most exciting thing ever as a fan. Cause like the moment you're like, team is about to speak, you have a prospect in your head, you want them to pick. Eagles fans wanted them to pick Earl Thomas one year and they picked Brandon Graham and they were all mad. Now they love Brandon. But yeah, that's why the draft is so exciting. Even though people like Connor Hughes tip picks, it's still fun.
Oh yeah, everybody remember to mute Connor before the draft.
And hey, Dexter McDougal, drafted by the Jets, was a terp, so I hope
there you go.
Referring to him.
No, Jerome McDougal, this was okay. years before, yeah, from Miami, yeah.
All the terp love.
before we get to Dane, speaking of speculating, you did put out a mock draft for the Jets, all their picks, so I want to get to that, Zach. Some news and notes though before that. Ashton Davis is back. Aaron Rodgers attending voluntary workouts. We didn't expect this again, right? Like, talk about the surprise nature of this and what it means, you think, for Rodgers and the team.
Yeah. You know, as it got closer, it seemed like maybe it was going to happen. I think a big part of it is like, I think he's using it as part of his recovery from his Achilles kind of thing. I'm curious if he's going to be here the whole time or not. Cause he's, even last year, he's like, I don't really see a lot of point of being here, but they have so many new pieces and many of them. I mean, Mike Williams is not going to be able to practice, so I guess he's not going to be playing with a lot of these guys. I don't think Tyron Smith was there. Not everybody was there. They did have a lot of people though. They tweeted a clip earlier of him throwing passes to Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall. There's a bunch of like tight ends and offensive linemen and stuff like that there. So there's value, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely not a negative thing having him in the building, especially as they try to like fix everything that's wrong. He happened to be there the same day as I know we were going to get into this. He happened to report the same day Brock Bowers happened to be coming on a visit. I'm sure maybe that was a coincidence, but I imagine they interacted with each other at some point. But yeah, so it's a positive, and more than anything, him getting on the field is big. And I'm very curious if he does stay for OTAs and if we get to see him on the practice field, because that would be like the first. I mean, it's not like contact or anything, but if we see him in like team drills or something, that'd be notable at the very least.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
But yeah, to go back to the Ashton Davis thing.
Yeah.
I think like a month ago on here, and I think in a story, I like had said that like they're operating as if they don't think he's going to come back. And that was true. Because Ashton wanted to find a starting job somewhere else. And the idea was, okay, if he doesn't find it, they're still going to have a job for him here. Robert Saleh even said that in an interview with the Jets team website, where he like basically like looked at the cameras, like, we still would love to have you back. I know you're looking around, but we'd love to have you back, Ashton. Clearly he didn't have a market because the contract he signed, it was 1 year, $2.7 million, and almost none of it guaranteed, which is pretty surprising to me. And that's kind of the contract of somebody who's not necessarily guaranteed a roster spot. I think he's going to make the team. They love him. He's a playmaker, good on special teams, but I expected him to have a little more interest. The safety market's so weird every year. Like, some of these guys don't get any money. Some of them get cut. Like, Justin Simmons is still out there. This makes safety a little bit less of a need in the draft, though I still wouldn't put it past them drafting somebody who's like a starter, because the only one under contract beyond this year is Tony Adams. So, it's a good re-signing. I think an important one and an underrated one, because I think he's become a good player. I know they're really happy in the building that he wound up coming back and that he didn't find the interest he was looking for elsewhere.
You mentioned Bowers, and I think if you scour like every mock draft that's out there on the internet, 75% of them have the Jets taking Bowers at number 10. So that's obviously a no-brainer that he would be in the building and be visiting the team. But when you look at overall at who's kind of come through those doors, are there any surprises in your mind?
Wouldn't necessarily say surprises. You know, the top 30 lists are always fascinating, because I think sometimes people put too much stock in like who's not on the list. And I wouldn't do that, because a lot of times these teams spend good time with these guys at their pro days, at the combine, at the Senior Bowl, especially at pro days. Like, they'll get dinner with a guy, they'll sit down with him and talk for a while. So like, when you don't see a guy like Talisi Fuago, who I think is a possibility, on the list, it doesn't necessarily mean they're not interested, but like, you only get 30 of these visits, so there's a reason why you're bringing guys in. And most years, the Jets draft a couple guys from that list. Last year, I think they only drafted Jerick Bernard Converse. Year before, Sauce, Garrett, and Jermaine Johnson all visited. In past years, they've had other ones. I think one of the interesting things to me is that, you know, it's not heavy on offensive linemen as I thought like their visits would be. And as far as I know, I haven't seen. I think I had 25 or 26 on the list. I think there's a receiver from North Carolina that I missed. There hasn't been any running backs on the list, which is at least interesting to me, because I thought maybe they'd be interested in running. Again, not this doesn't mean that they're not, and they didn't even host Will McDonald for a visit last year, I don't think, and use their first round pick. So, in terms of all that, it's interesting. At least they did bring in a few quarterbacks who are possibilities on day three. Dane and I get into that a little bit, as well as the whole Brock Bowers dilemma. But you know, I would surmise that somebody on the list of their top 30 is going to be a Jet. I don't know who or how many of them, but usually that's a fair guess for most of these teams, I would say.
All right. So your mock draft, and it's been out for, what was that, 2 weeks ago you put that out?
I'll have a final one on Monday as well.
Okay. So we're going off the one that's maybe a little bit dated at this point, but I feel like you were catering to Jets fans here.
They did like it. I got good reviews on
that. Of course you did. Yeah. You were like begging the audience. Like, if I, you know, was a diehard Jets fan and reading this, I'm like, giddy up, let's go, right? Like, I'm on board with this. Although some people would probably say, no, don't trade down. But yeah. I think it's always good to trade down for the most part, unless there's something glaring there. So I'm going to zip through this and then we can talk about some of the like the key points here. But you do have them trading the number 10 to the Steelers in return, getting number 20 in the first round, along with a second rounder, a sixth rounder, and then a fourth rounder in 2025. Great haul for the number 10 pick. And then it gets backed up by the fact that at number 20, you have them taking Brian Thomas Jr., wide receiver out of LSU. So they move back. They still get a wide receiver. Then second round, tackle Kingsley Samataia from BYU. So they get the lineman that we know they'd like to get. And then at 72, they go safety, Jaden Hicks out of Washington State. Running back at 111. I'm just going to go position. You mentioned the quarterbacks that you'll get to with Dame. But Jordan Travis out of Florida State, who is obviously – you know, you can argue NFL versus college quarterback, but he was the heart and soul of that Florida State offense, as we saw when he got injured. And they ended up not making the playoff because of that. And then sixth round, Daquan Hardy out of Penn State. And then at number 256, Matt Lee, a center out of Miami. And then Nathaniel Watson, linebacker out of Mississippi State at 257, as they have back-to-back picks there late in the seventh round. I mean, that's on paper, that's a dream draft. But what about the debate of trade up, trade down, stay at 10?
Yeah, the trade back thing is pretty fascinating to me, because I could see the argument for not doing it because you're getting the chance at getting a top 10 player, and the odds decrease as you go further down the order of players being, you know, stars. And like I think back to when I covered the Giants, they traded back from 11 with the Bears to number 20, and they drafted Kadarius Toney. The Bears traded up to get Justin Fields. They got a first round pick and a fourth round pick the next year. They used those picks on Evan Neal and Daniel Bellinger, which obviously hasn't worked out. And they could have drafted Michael Parsons, Rashawn Slater there. So, like, you're risking missing out on, like, a star. Like, it's basically a debate of, do I want one star or do I want, like, three solid players and maybe one of them hits as a star? But you also have to hit on your evaluations of those guys. And everybody thinks they're going to hit on their evaluations, but, you know, and you're increasing the odds of getting a good player by getting three of them, but the Giants got three bad players there. So, like, it's not guaranteed, and nothing's guaranteed in the draft, obviously. So it's just very fascinating. But I think I would trade back depending on who's there at 10, just to get that second round pick and fill out the depth chart. But I also would understand if they don't. I wouldn't have a problem with them picking Brian Thomas at 10. Dane Brugler, I actually talked about that specifically, so I won't touch on that too much. But yeah, you know, and trading up, like, if one of those receivers is there at 8 with the Falcons, like, I would explore moving up 2 picks. That shouldn't be too much to move up that to that spot. So I think everything's on the table for the Jets right now. I go back and forth on whether I think they should pick a tackle or a weapon. A lot of it depends on who's there. I think the Brock Bowers pick makes a lot of sense, though I get people who are skeptical of, like, drafting a tight end at 10.
Yeah, totally makes sense. All right, we're going to get to Dane here in a second. I did want to say, though, programming note, when we get to the draft next week, as of now, the plan is, unless things go haywire, we will have a live stream Thursday night when the Jets are done wrapping everything up. We'll come to you with reaction to that. And then we'll kind of have an update from there. We'll either have another thing on Friday, or we'll come back with a full recap on Monday, kind of depending on where the Jets are in this draft. But a definite round one recap on Thursday night. So look forward to that. And without anything else, let's go to Dane.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live. Only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, now this is something that Jets fans are always looking forward to, but this time of year, it's nice that it's actually April and we can talk about the draft. So please welcome in the Athletics draft guru, Dane Brugler. Dane, thank you for joining us this morning. We know you're super busy, and it is our honor to have you here.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. Good morning, guys.
So, I mean, everybody every year looks forward to the Beast. It's like we all mark our calendars. Take us through what this year's Beast has been like for you and just this whole draft process before we get into like the Jets picks and everything.
Yeah, you know, it's an 18-month process. It's something that it goes back to this time last year, getting ready for the upcoming draft. And you just can't help but pick up these little nuggets and things along the way. And that's, I treat my job as a scout. You know, it's a 24-7 fact-finding mission. And it's tape study. It's talking to a million different people, including all these players. And, you know, my job is to create a report that is going to give readers a more clear picture of who the player is, both the background, the journey they've had to this point, and then, of course, the analysis. You know, what are their traits? What do they do best? Where they need to work on? What's their projection to the next level? And it can be tough at times when you're doing it from a general perspective. I'm not scouting for a specific scheme or culture fit. I'm looking at all these guys through a general lens. But I think that the Beast overall, it's a resource guide, and I hopefully it gives fans a really good inside look at who each one of these guys are as people and also as players.
What's the moment like for you when you finally finish it and like send it in? Like, is there relief? Or are you still like freaking out? You're like, shit, what if I forgot something?
Well, that's it. It's a little bit of both because I mean, I'm so immersed in this for 24/7 that it's like, okay, a typo here, or I missed this little thing here that I meant to go back and correct. Or so, yeah, trust me, we've got a lot of smart readers. So they'll let me know if they find something, but, so it's a little bit of both, but above all, it's just a sense of relief to be done with it. And it's like, you know what, screw it at this point, it's out there. And you know, there's a lot more, if there are a typo here or there, I just come to grips that it's going to happen. But no, I'm very proud of the product we were able to come up with this year.
And you should be. I think my favorite thing, so the Beast has been out for a week now, and my favorite thing the morning it was released was, I mean, every single person in the NFL universe was tweeting it out, sharing love for Dane. Like, Dane and I have gotten to know each other over the past few years, and it's just, I see how hard you work, Dane, and it's so cool to see how, like, everyone in this whole NFL space, you know, appreciates the work you do, you know, from Adam Schefter on down. And it's been wonderful to see all the love you're getting. So we appreciate you taking the time, and we don't have a ton of time this morning. So I think we got to get to the Jets question.
Yeah.
Zach's got a long list.
So. Yeah. I was going to say, you do make it, you make me sound smarter when I talk about these prospects that I haven't like watched.
Appreciate it sometimes.
Great, yeah, Zach, so, fire away.
Yeah, so we can start so your 7-round mock came out this morning. We can start out with like what you thought of the Jets haul that you put together, and like what kind of your overall thought process was with them.
Well, it starts with Brock Bowers, right? At number one, at 10 overall. And I don't know. I when I look at it, I know people get freaked out when you see that the T and the E next to his name, and it's like, oh, we can't draft a tight end that early.
Jets fans have been fighting about it on Twitter.
But okay, let's just take away the T and the E, all right? Yeah. Let's just call him a dynamic weapon, you know? Let's focus on that. Let's focus on that he can line up in the slot. He can line up outside. He can line up in line, the backfield. Make defenses account for him on every single play. This is an offensive weapon, a dynamic offensive weapon. And, you know, I understand the track record of tight ends has not been great, but I don't know, should Kansas City Chiefs not have drafted Patrick Mahomes because the track record of Texas Tech quarterbacks weren't great? Like, I don't know. You have to trust your evaluation. You have to trust what you see. And think about all the players that were on that Georgia team 2 years ago that won a national title, or 3 years ago when they won a national title. We're talking about George Pickens and Jermaine Burton, all these guys. Adonai Mitchell was on that team. It was Brock Bowers that was the star as a true freshman of that team. And he's done it every single year. So, yeah, I understand the not wanting to draft a tight end that early. I get it. But when you look at the Jets and kind of the win now mentality that they're in, I think it just kind of matches up. So will he fall outside? I don't think he's going to fall outside the top half of round one. 10, 12, 15, somewhere in there, I think Brock Bowers is going to go. I think he's going to be an offensive rookie of the year candidate in that first year.
Yeah, and I, to your point, I feel like based on like who we all think is going to be there at 10, if they're really win now, I don't know if there's a more win now player they could draft right there than him, right?
Right. Yeah. And you can't go wrong drafting. I mean, I shouldn't say you can't go wrong because offensive linemen don't always work out. But the idea of drafting an offensive lineman is never a bad thing in terms of adding depth. And, you know, nobody knows better than Jets fans the attrition in the offensive line. And it's always next man up. And you better have somebody else ready to take the mantle and step in there from day one. So if they go with an offensive lineman, I'm not going to bash the pick. I get it. It makes sense, especially if it's like, say, a Troy Faitanu from Washington, who is so versatile, can line up tackle, guard. Some believe he has five position versatility. So I'm never going to bash a pick like that. But if they're going to look to maximize this offense in a win now situation, I think Brock Bowers makes a ton of sense.
And so jumping off that, actually, because I think that's kind of the debate that everybody's having with the Jets right now is, do they need an offensive lineman more, or do they need like a weapon more? Because they like kind of filled those in free agency, but like still with guys with a lot of questions. Obviously, offensive line, they signed Tyron Smith, missed 37 games the last 4 years. Morgan Moses coming off surgery. AVT has had a lot of injuries the last couple of years. So like, out of these offensive linemen that are all considered the prospects at 10, whether it's Faga, Fashanu, JC Latham, Fautanu, like which of those guys, I guess, would you say is the most like win now that could like, he could start in week one and be fine. And which of these guys do you think could stand to like sit and watch Tyron Smith for however many weeks before you might have to jump in for him? Like, how do you like balance it out with that kind of thing?
Yeah, and I think Faitanu, I think he's ready to step in. I mean, he's and a guy that you can throw on the tape and see him at left tackle. You can see him at left guard. Aesthetically, he looks like a guard, just the way he plays, and I think the strengths of his game. But, okay, you look at it, he has 34.5-inch arms. You watch his tape, and you see left tackle feet. His athleticism is fun to watch. So I think that versatility that Faitanu brings and just the traits to be able to start from day one if they needed him to, I think it makes him a very possible candidate there. He finishes my number two offensive lineman, even if I do think his best fit long-term is inside a guard. I'd have no problem sticking him at tackle. And then with the tackles, Fuaga from Oregon State, he's another plug-and-play guy. Now, the question with him is, okay, is he a right tackle only? Yeah. Can he play on the left side? We only saw him on the right side. So it is a projection if we're going to say, okay, he can move over to the left side. But you know, that's why you pay the offensive line coaches all that money to not only help coach him, but to figure that out. You know, during pro day, during workouts, put him in a left-hand stance and see how he does. And same thing with J.C. Latham. Same thing with Amarius Mims, Tyler Guyton. These guys were all right tackles in college, and there is a bit of a projection about whether or not they can move to the left side. Now, Olu Fashanu, at Penn State, he was a left tackle. So less of a projection with him. Although if you want him to play right tackle, he didn't do that. So it's a projection there. So all these tackles have some questions. And I'm not mentioning Joe Alt. We think Joe Alt's going to be off the board at this point. But yeah, I think all of these tackles are really talented, even if they do have a few questions about where they project immediately and what's their best long-term fit.
Yeah. So if the Jets trade back, I think Mims and Guyton are the two that jump out, like if you go into the teens or whatever, like based on your evaluations, they seem like guys who are maybe a little more developmental to start out, right? Because they didn't have as much experience and all that.
That's it, no doubt. And yeah, Amarius Mims to me is the most fascinating player in the draft because you're talking about a guy that's 6'8", 340. I've never seen 340 pounds look like that. It is clean. There's no sloppiness to him. Over 36-inch arms. His wingspan's ridiculous. But 8 starts. And I think it's important to differentiate being raw and being experienced, and he is more inexperienced than he is raw, because you watch the first game he ever started against Ohio State in the college football playoffs last year, he was outstanding. You know, it's very natural for him, especially in pass protection. He moves really well. He understands timing. Now, some of the fundamentals he needs to continue to work on and become, it's more muscle memory than anything. Yeah. But it's very natural for him because of the tools that he has. It's rare. So I don't think that he needs to have 40 starts going into the NFL to necessarily contribute right away. But, you know, there will be a learning curve, obviously, with a guy with so few starts and going up against NFL competition. But if 3-4 years from now you tell me that Amarius Mims is the best tackle from this class, I don't think it'd be that surprising.
Wow.
I'd like to hear that.
Yeah. He was the most fascinating one out of those guys to me.
You can't, there's no guys walking around the streets that look like him. Yeah. He's rare. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting where he ends up, the Eagles would be a perfect spot because he can sit behind Lane Johnson. Right.
Scotland,
so, right. Exactly. Yeah. We'll see where he ends up and if he's pressed into action right away. But you know, if the Jets do trade back and take him there, I think, you know, that you can understand why he wouldn't be pressed in action from day one, hopefully. And he can kind of develop him at his own pace. But yeah, he's got things that you just can't coach.
So how would you characterize how talented this wide receiver class is, especially at the top, obviously, but like even in general? It just seems like if the Jets don't pick a receiver in round one, like you can get a starting caliber guy in round three, which I don't know that that's every year that you can say that, right?
Yeah, well, and I do think receiver, it's just the rest of our lives is going to be a strong position.
True, yeah. It does seem like every year it's getting more and more.
There's so many of these guys, right? I mean, even if you don't love your options in the third round, there's going to be someone that you like. It's just inevitable because there's so many players. And, you know, growing up, if you're not a quarterback, you're going to be a receiver because that's
it's the sexiest.
Those are the guys that score points. Yeah, that's affecting the scoreboard. And every team needs those guys. So every year teams are going to take swings on these wide receivers. We're going to see, even though it is a deep position this year, they're going to fly off the board in the first two rounds. I won't be surprised if we see 13, 14 receivers drafted just because everybody wants that guy. Everyone wants that playmaker. And
on a rookie contract now, cause those numbers are going up for receivers. Yeah,
exactly. And even with that said, I do think that in the third round, fourth round, there will still be guys that you are optimistic about. And you know, for like in my mock draft, I gave him the Jets Malik Washington from Virginia in the fourth round, a guy that I have a third round grade on. He's small, and that's what you have to be okay with the size. He's 5'8.5", 191 pounds, 4'4" athlete. But his body control and ball skills are outstanding. He will go make plays on the ball. Doesn't matter the level. It could be a screen pass. It could be down the field. He is very good when the ball is in the air and then after the catch. And so Malik Washington will fall a little bit because of that size. But if he were to make it to the fourth round and you know to the Jets pick, I think that'd be a really nice fit.
What's your thought on Brian Thomas as like an option at 10? Or do you think that's a little too early? I mean, it seems like talent-wise, especially on the Jets, where maybe he won't have to step in as like the number one or even number two receiver. Like that could be an intriguing fit, but I was curious where you stand on his like value there.
Yeah, no, it should be considered. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm very interested with Thomas's landing spot because there have been teams in the top 10 that have brought him in for 30 visits. The Jets have done a lot of work on Brian Thomas. I think, you know, your point is interesting about, you know, going to a team where he's not going to be step in and asked to be that true X receiver from day one. And, you know, we kind of bring him along at his own pace, but 6'3", 210, 4.33 speed. And especially when the ball's in the air and he has a chance to go and get it, he has a different speed. And for a guy that size, and it's kind of like what I was saying with Amarius Mims being inexperienced, but not raw. That's kind of the same thing with Brian Thomas and his route running. You watch his film and it's a lot of goes, a lot of slants. You know, they didn't really let him blossom as a route runner, but when they did let him do some things, he could do it. And he has the athleticism. He can sink his hips. He can snap off routes. So I think he can expand that route tree when he gets to the NFL. It's just a matter of being able to do it and being allowed to do it. So yeah, I'm bullish on Brian Thomas. I think he belongs somewhere in the top half of round one. And if the Jets looking at 10, I don't think that's crazy.
Cool. All right. And we'll one more for you, cause I know you got to get out of here, but, so the Jets have
quarterbacks.
The Jets have the oldest quarterback room in the league right now. Rodgers is turning 41. Tyrod Taylor's turning 35. Zach Wilson's probably on the way out. So, you had them getting Devin Leary, I think, in your mock. What do you think of the day two, day three guys, the like Joe Milton, Spencer Rattlers, Michael Pratt, like that group, like what do you think about these guys as like developmental third guy to learn from Rodgers for the year or whatever?
Yeah, I think it makes sense to take a swing on a quarterback if you're the Jets. It's a lottery ticket. You know, you just never know what you're going to find. I do think that drafting a quarterback, I don't know that they can draft a quarterback too early. So I think you're really looking at day three and those options. And for me, Michael Pratt from Tulane, he would be maybe that first guy I would look at. 6'2 and a half, 220 pounds, really good athlete, really efficient, really accurate. He projects as more of a really good backup. But if he gets a chance to start down the road, I don't know that he gives the job back. He is I'm really optimistic about Michael Pratt. So he would be in that mix. Devin Leary is kind of also in that tier, maybe right behind. I struggle with him because his tape is so inconsistent. But man, he's got an NFL arm, and you look at the highlights, you look at what he does well, and it looks really pretty. He can make every throw that you want. And especially you go back to the 2021 season before he got hurt, he was outstanding at NC State. He had 35-5 touchdown interception ratio. He was looking like, okay, he's going to be a big time player. Then he got hurt. The next year didn't work out at NC State. He transfers to Kentucky. This past year was up and down. So he is a tough guy to project because there's more ability and more consistency than he showed on film because he did it years ago.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of getting that out of him and getting the best out of him. So, but if we're talking, because I think I gave it to him, what, in the sixth round?
Yeah.
So if we're talking a sixth round pick, to me,
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me that lottery ticket and see what happens.
Dane, thank you so much again, joining us. This is always so wonderful. We love having you on, and I know everybody loves listening to you. And if you want to hear more of Dane, Draft Night, the Athletic Football Show, is coming live from Detroit for all the whole first round and day two. So
yep.
Dane will have all of the insight, and it's amazing what he can pull out of the beast and like the facts that he could just whip out at Robert and Nate. So you absolutely don't want to miss that. And of course, if you haven't downloaded the beast, please go subscribe to The Athletic. It is 100% worth the subscription. So, Dane, thank you so much for joining us, and we always appreciate it.
Thanks, Dane.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Thank you all so much for listening to this episode. We will be back on the Can't Wait podcast after the draft.